I don't like how, you know, whoever has made it a matchup, me against Tyreek. He's good for what he does for their team. You know, he made all pro as a return specialist. Let's get that right. As a return specialist, his rookie year. He went to 2 Pro Bowls as a return specialist. Return specialist, 2 years. I made all pro in my position as a corner. Went to the Pro Bowl as a corner. So it's not a wide receiver versus corner matchup. So we can get that out of the way.
That's Jacksonville's Jalen Ramsey last year before a matchup against Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs. As we know, Ramsey is one of the best trash talkers in the NFL, but as good as his trash talk is now, it was so much better in college. He recently joined Bussin' with the Boys podcast and gave some details about his college days.
Say I was playing like a big receiver at whatever school, I would look up his Instagram, see his girlfriend, whatever, boom, boom, and I.
You can cuss to yourself.
Yeah, I'd probably go slide in her DMs.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah,
before the game?
Before the game.
Yo, like, I love that, dude. That's amazing.
Before the game, I'd probably slide in her DMs and. You know, we get to the game. He probably know about it. Maybe he do. Maybe she was gone. Maybe she was gone.
Yeah.
But either he know about it or he don't. But either way, I'm bringing it up in the game. Like, yeah, you know, I slid in first name basis. DM. Yeah. She hollering at like we.
How mad? They get so mad away.
Oh yeah. People get hot about that. But I'll say when I got to the league though, I stopped that because now people got wives and stuff. Yeah. I ain't talking about nobody wives.
Somebody. That's tough. Wives are hard.
Yeah. Somebody get shot over talking about somebody's wives.
You don't want to be shot.
That is awesome. That's an awesome mind game to
that's
play.
That's next level.
Yeah, it is.
Right there.
Now, I've heard of, you know, people in the stands, fans razzing players. They find out stuff about them and then they get a little
your
personal.
Wikipedia.
Right.
They know your kids'
which
names.
Which I think is good. It's even better if a guy who's directly across from you and is competing against you is finding out everything he can about you so he can throw it in your face in the middle of the game. That's awesome.
.505 in the fast lane. Time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Guys, Clemson coach Dabo Swinney did not have a championship ring produced for Kelly Bryant. He says, quote, "You got to be on the team to get a ring." Bryant did lead the Clemson Tigers to their first 4 victories before being benched for Trevor Lawrence. Take it or leave it, Dabo is kind of being a Richard here.
Take it.
I'm going to take it too.
Take it.
I like Dabo Swinney a lot. But what do you care?
It's extremely petty. It sounds like a guy who's mad somebody left him. A guy tried to improve his position in life to go somewhere else, much like any college coach would do, improve their own position if they got an opportunity. So Bryant wants to go start somewhere. He got you 4 wins, so he got you a fourth of your wins.
And 16-2 overall.
And by the way, that helps you get into the title game. So yes, he did help you win a championship. So yes. Dabo's being a big baby.
Yeah, just give him a ring.
Yeah.
And Bryant would probably never wear it because he would feel like he didn't earn it. It would be something that would be sitting in his office at home. But you give it to him because he was kind of there.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. All right, so around golf, pace of play has been a topic. And apparently some of the biggest stars are talking about it. Brooks Koepka has been one that's very vocal about it. Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods, all talking about the slow play. And this one more for Meat and Randy. Take it or leave it, the PGA Tour has nothing on you guys.
I'll take that today.
I'll take it from what I heard earlier.
Six-hour round today. Pretty impressive.
5.5. It was not great.
That's pretty impressive. We got to see the whole course, though.
Yeah, we did.
That's nice. I like that. To me, one of the worst things golfing is when you get somebody slow in front of you.
Yeah.
If you get that group that's just holding you up, and every time you get to the tee box, you got to sit there and just, here we go again. Old Johnny's duffing one again over. You see the guy hit a ball 3 times before he catches up. I'm usually that guy, by the way, that's still in the fairway hitting my ball 3 times when I'm catching up to my group.
Been there, yep.
Yeah, it's a bad feeling.
Golf needs a pitch clock.
Not a bad idea.
Don't they?
Yeah, they're supposed to.
Just don't use it.
Remember the name Adam Litwin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because when Adam was 9 years old, he wanted to be a doctor, and he dreamed of it his entire life. Well, apparently, Adam ultimately enrolled into medical school. He was at SLU for a short period of time at the med school there. He dropped out because, I guess, classwork for him was a little too tedious. Well, he ended up pretending to be a doctor for almost 9 months out at UCLA, at their hospital there, until he was eventually found out. He was arrested, spent a little bit in jail, got out of jail, and you know what he is today?
What?
A doctor. He actually went and got his medical degree, though he's having trouble finding residency in certain hospitals don't want to hire him.
I get it.
Take it or leave it. Even though he is a doctor, you would be on board or you would not be on board with him treating you.
I'll take it.
Oh, he went to school now and he's a doctor?
Yeah.
I'm totally on board with that. I have no problem.
So you're going to leave it?
I'll just go with the one that's been a doctor the whole time.
I'm going to take it. I don't know if I want a dude pretending to be a doctor at any point in his life for an extended period of time, treating me in any way.
Did you ever see the movie Catch Me If You Can?
Yes.
DiCaprio?
Yes.
Frank Avignale?
Avignale,
there you go.
Yeah,
which is a true story. Didn't he play a doctor at some point?
He pretended to be a doctor.
Yeah. And a pilot, right?
Then the FBI hired him.
Why didn't I just concur?
Yeah. There you go.
I concur.
Big Sis, what do you got?
You guys know what's going on the evening of Thursday, August 22nd?
No.
Any
chance? It's the Harrison Bader bobblehead night. Take it or leave it. He's here for it.
Leave it.
When is it?
August 22nd.
I'm going to leave it as well.
6:45 start against the Rockies, by the way.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
Maybe they can send those down to Memphis.
Nah, you can still use it. You'll certainly be able to.
September?
He's going to be here in September. At the very latest.
The bobblehead is actually of him in a race car. Maybe that's what he's driving back and forth.
Oh, is that for the...
Oh, yeah, the Speedway one, right?
I get it.
He was on the... Wasn't he on the cover of Cardinal Magazine like that, too? Like in front of a race car at Gateway's...
Yeah, that's right. Before the Bomberito 500, I guess.
Worldwide Technology Raceway Night.
Yeah. By the way, he's hitting .214 in 28 at-bats for Memphis. With a .290 on base and a .214 slug. So a lot of singles.
Guys, it's going to be hard to get on board for this one, but take it or leave it. The Cardinals would have been better off if they would have picked up Yelich and Ozuna at the same time.
Well, I guess I'll take it.
Yeah.
We won't go down the road again where, you know, he wasn't available. Whatever, but I'll take it. Certainly it'd be better if he had
Would
Yelich.
They have been better with Stanton, Yelich, and Ozuna.
Oh, man, now you're pushing it, Randy. I don't know if three great players makes your team better. Ah, you know what? Just for the sake of this, I'll take it.
Take it or leave it. Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Will be the home of a Major League Baseball franchise by 2022.
I will leave that. That's way too early.
Yeah, I'm going to leave it, too.
Yeah.
I wonder what happens with the A's. I wonder if Oakland actually helps the A's out after the Raiders leave.
Well, the A's is one, and the Diamondbacks are another one.
Yeah, 2022.
And maybe that's why, because Vegas, and more specifically Henderson, which is just an offshoot of Vegas, they have they were in contact with the Diamondbacks about their stadium stuff and offered up a stadium site and a proposal at the very least. So they're interested out there. I just wonder if the interest would go both ways. But 2022 is way too early for me.
Let me spin it this way. Take it or leave it. Vegas will be the home to an NBA team by 2022.
I'll leave that too.
2022 just in general is way too quick. Take it or leave it. Las Vegas will be home to a Major League Baseball team before it's home to an NBA team.
I'm going to leave that.
I'm going to leave it too.
I'm going to leave it as well. Yep. I think NBA would fit so well.
I think it would play really
NBA
well
Summer
out there.
NBA Summer League does so good out there. Yes. Everybody wants to be there. It's a star city. NBA is a star league. I feel like it's just such a good fit.
Plus, they got the 51s out there. They don't need Major League
Baseball.
No, they
don't. They have the Las Vegas Aviators.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Formerly known as the 51s in a brand new, beautiful ballpark out west. It's awesome.
I like 51s better.
Me too, actually.
And by the way, Henderson, it was reported last week, did reach out to the Diamondbacks, but apparently nothing came of it in the the idea of a Diamondbacks move to Vegas is dead at the moment.
By the way, if you like the 51s, you'll like this about the Aviators. They have that bat dog. You remember the one where the umpire?
The bat dog, and the umpire threw the bat away from the dog to be a jerk.
So they have that dog, though.
Oh.
He cool.
And take it or leave it, one of the members of the Fast Lane could fake being a real doctor for 9 months.
Take it. I think any of us, any three of us could. Any of us three could.
9 months is a long time. We're going to kill lots of people in that time. Like, yeah, hopefully probably. We're not important doctors.
Apparently, if he had
not
to do anything.
Minimalize psychiatrists, any doctors, by the way. Whoa, I just said not to. We didn't have to name any.
I'm just saying.
Oh, I could see somebody on the couch, though.
So could
good advice, bad advice. Like, yep. It is what it is. I'm going to give you advice, and I'm going to listen, and I'm going to say, mm-hmm.
There you go. It's not that
Tell
hard.
Me how you feel.
Yep,
though.
And then just take notes.
Yeah. Once again, not to minimalize anything
right.
that anybody does.
So apparently, Dr. Litwin would pretend if he ever had to do anything, something serious, like scrub up for surgery one time, they asked him to do it, and he said, I got to go. And he made up some excuse and had to run out. So he just kind of hung around the hospital, and he would go to the cafeteria, and he had purchased a lab coat, okay, on his own. And his lab coat was different than every other doctor's. It had his picture on it, like something like embroidered or something on his coat. And eventually somebody said, what the hell is wrong with this guy? And they looked him up, and turned out he wasn't real.
How about that?
Yeah.
You know what? Even real doctors mess up. I was reading a story about a couple of doctors that worked on the wrong kidney recently that are getting sued. Patient came in, it's like, it was one of the kidneys was bad, the other one was fine, they worked on the wrong one.
That's not great.
Sorry about it.
Thanks for your text to the Hot Shots text line 65780. Big Sis, thanks to you.
Thank you.
We're going to head to the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line, and our buddy Greg Amzinger will join us next on 101 ESPN. The great Greg Amzinger is with us now on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line on 101 ESPN. Always good to have you with us. MLB featuring the Yankees and Blue Jays tonight at 7. And then you're going to be on MLB tonight after the game, and we'll be tuned in here in St. Louis.
Oh, Randy, good to hear your voice. Yeah, I'll be on with Harold and John Smoltz. And you know, I'm not good at golf, but I didn't know how bad I am at golf until I played with John Smoltz. Randy, it's a different world out there. He's amazing. He's what they look like. He literally plays on the senior tour now. It's incredible to watch him hit a golf ball.
He's always played like a pro, but literally is a pro now?
Yeah, he's on the Champions Tour. Like, how many guys can live two lives like this? He mastered baseball, Hall of Famer, and now he's like, you know, golf with the legends. He lives a life. He'd be an all-American kickball player if it was a professional league.
That's amazing.
One of those guys. It's kind of annoying.
Greg, what's the weakest part of your golf game? What always catches you up?
You know, Randy see me play. I come in spurts, man. Like, I'd say I'm a mental midget in a tee box. The game is too slow for my brain, right? So if you watch me on MLB tonight, I've got up to 15 games going on at once. I love the chaos. I love how fast it is. A tee box is slow and quiet and wait your turn, and now here you are, and you're thinking, and it's just too much. It's too slow. So I gotta be fast. I gotta be slow, chatty, chatty Cathy, and then when it's time to hit, walk up and hit the ball. So tee boxes always eat me alive.
So everybody always talks about, and you mentioned Smoltz, which is perfect. Like, pitching and golf are very similar, where it's like, it's all on you. You got all the time in the world, although they'd like to speed you up. But you better be mentally tough and go from one to the other. Are you saying as a youth you weren't a great pitcher either?
yeah. Well, I was more of a contact sport guy, so I wanted chaos. I'm a reactor. Right?
Okay.
I'm not a planner and an executor. I'm a reactor. So John Smoltz is, think of it this way, process, not results. And I am results-based. I want the next line to come out of my mouth to be like a heavy hitter laugher, right? Well, John Smoltz is thinking about the mechanics of pitching, the mechanics of his swing, and it's a very simple, fluid thought, which you can see translate into his simple, fluid swing, whereas I have a lot going on. And yeah, look, I'll give you this one quick story, and then we'll talk baseball. I went to a golf academy around Thanksgiving. It was in Boca, and it was awesome. And they had me interviewed on a speakerphone with like five or six different golf pros. And they match you up with the golf pro that mentally understands the way you talk about the game. Okay, how cool is this? So I show up, and I got this guy. He's my pro. We're going to work together for 3 days extensively. And he introduces himself and he goes, "Just so you know, I get all the wackos."
That's great.
So, Greg, moving over to baseball now, we talked a lot about what the Cardinals did or did not do at the trade deadline versus the rest of baseball. And here we are. They've won one game since that deadline. Does it change how you feel about them and their prospects for getting into the playoffs this year?
Yeah. No, I think, you know, you hear about a team that acquires a big-name player, and what that does can energize a clubhouse, make them feel like the front office believes we're all in, and the guys that we have already in-house are good enough to get to the playoffs, and then this is the missing piece that we added to win the World Series. So that energizes a clubhouse. When a front office does nothing, and you watch your competitors who are within a game or maybe even tied for first place with you all add, that can also be deflating. And this team looks deflated. I think that game yesterday against the Dodgers was one of the most back-breaking losses of the season in all of baseball. We've seen a few teams lose that those are crushing losses. I look at the way the Cardinals conducted business on the day of the trade deadline, the way the Giants conduct business on the day of the trade deadline, and these two teams are deflated, and you see the aftermath of it right now. They're both playing terrible baseball. On the flip side, you see a team like the New York Mets who are like, wait a minute, our front office thinks we have a shot? What? Why are we getting Marcus Stroman? Why are we keeping Zach Wheeler? This makes no sense. I mean, wow, they must be pretty good. And they're on a tear right now. So, you know, we're still dealing with humans. As much as we want all of these players to be spreadsheet ink, as much as we want that and to know exactly what they're going to do, they're still humans. They perform off emotion. And right now, deflated is the word for the Cardinals. I said that to you last week, guys. I thought, you know, I was befuddled is what I said about how this front office thought it was okay to roll with what they had. Michaelis and Flaherty continue to be great. Tip my cap to that. But this team wanted something else. They didn't get it. And here we are.
Greg Amzinger, MLB Network, with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Let's bounce around baseball a little bit. What a disaster they have going on in Baltimore. A bad team. And now an apparently very unhappy Chris Davis with his manager, Brandon Hyde.
I went on the air last night after I watched that live, and I said, he has to be DFA'd. And John Smoltz and Harold were very upset by that commentary. And I said, guys, I don't care if he's owed 3 years, $69 million at the end of the year. I don't care. We don't need no team needs a daily reminder that you made a terrible business decision. It's write him a check, let him go buy a small island, and then forget he ever played that. Like, at the end of the day, if you're statistically the worst player in baseball, which if you look at WAR over the last 2 years, he's the worst player in baseball, okay? If you're the worst player in baseball and you're making by yourself three times what the rest of the team is essentially making outside of Mark Trumbo and Alex Cobb, right? So now you're a financial liability. All you can bring to the table is hustle and professionalism, leadership. That's all you can bring. And when you don't hustle after a pop-up in foul territory and it bounces in the front row, and then you charge your manager, I don't care what Brandon Hyde said. Brandon Hyde didn't charge Chris Davis. Chris Davis charged Brandon Hyde. If this is what you're doing now, see you later. The only reason, in my eyes, that they keep him is to make him miserable. Because at this point, he's 33 years old, and he wants to retire now and enjoy giving a check. He wants a check for $69 million so he can go off into the sunset. And the Orioles are like, you know what? We might as well make you miserable and make you come to the yard. It's an ugly scene. And for every single slugger going forward that is really frustrated that they can't get more than a 2 or 3 year contract for the next 5 years in free agency, they all need to be told Chris Davis existed for the Baltimore Orioles. And that will make them go, oh, that's right. That's why I'm not getting a long-term deal.
Any press is good press, though, right? I mean, at least the Orioles are getting talked about.
No, they were getting talked about before because they were about to set a record for most home runs given up in a single season. It's ridiculous what this pitching staff is doing. It's a minor league pitching staff against professional baseball players. What the Yankees are doing over 40 home runs in 10 games at Camden Yards is a joke. And that was a home game. for the New York Yankees last night. It was a home game for the entire series, he said. And Yankee fans love and life. And I'm saying, there's no fight in this team anymore. It's not Brandon High's fault. He's given a team with no talent. This is a rough scene right now. And, you know, it's funny. I remember when Frank McCourt ran the Dodgers into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of a sudden it was dangerous around Dodger Stadium. And Bud Selig essentially forced Frank McCourt to sell the team. They had to see it, an ugly divorce going on, forced him to sell the team. Now, Mr. Angelos and that ownership group, they've been around for a while. But you tell me why the Baltimore Orioles are a productive product right now. I don't see it. No one's going to the games. The product on the field is the worst in the game. I don't see where there's light at the end of the tunnel. I just don't. And in that division, you can't sell me on the fact that this team will be within striking distance of a playoff spot in the month of September in the next 5 years. That is a very strong statement, but I don't see it coming.
Hey, Greg, here's a fun fact for you. The Yankees, with four games left against the Orioles, as you know, have hit 52 home runs against the Orioles, just against the Orioles this year. The 1982 World Series champion Cardinals hit 67 home runs all season long.
I mean, how embarrassing is that? Look, it's a combination of a couple things. A, the balls are juiced. Everyone knows that. B, the Orioles pitching is just terrible. It's not terrible. It's double-A pitching. It's double-A. Double-A team's pitching for the Orioles. So you can't say it's terrible. They're just not at the level of professional baseball players. And then C, Brian Cashman deserves Executive of the Year. I mean, New York pixie dust that's all over this team is ridiculous. You got the backup catcher hitting two bombs, Gio Urshela hitting two bombs. You know, think about the players there. Cameron Maben is playing like an all-star. You know, they knew Luke Voigt was going to be great. Here he comes over. Before they gave Aaron Hicks $70 million, no one wanted him. They took him in. Okay? It is ridiculous how this team is playing. And may I remind you that they have a first-round pick that's going to be a 30-40 Hall of player named Clint Frazier, who they're just letting rot in AAA. And he's not catching fly balls. He's a mental basket case out there defensively. But offensively, he is a star in the making that they don't even need right now. Oh, man, I forgot. Mike Tauchman's the best player since July 1st in the sport. Who's that? They traded for him. Tyler Wade thought he was going to make the team before opening day. And they went and traded for Mike Tauchman because he's a better defensive player from the Rockies. The Rockies didn't want him. They gave him two cups of coffee over 2 years. The kid didn't hit over 200. Mike Tauchman comes over. Now he's the best hitter in baseball since July 1st. What the New York Yankees are doing is it's ridiculous. And who knows? It could lead to a world championship come October.
Greg, with all the home runs that we were just talking about, and you mentioned the juiced baseballs, we know that there's a focus on whatever you want to call it, whether it be your approach, your launch angle, getting the ball in the air, and then looking at the Cardinals' just overall roster, all right, just looking at the people there, the personnel. And they started off hot. They looked like they were going to be one of those teams that was in the mix. They find themselves right now, as far as homers go, 12th in the NL with 141. Where's all the power gone, Greg?
You know, as much as I would like to see the team hit more homers, where is old-school Cardinal baseball? I get it. We're not going to have guys bunting for hits to lead off games. We're not going to hit and run, double steal. But it's a base-to-base team. They're playing the same brand of baseball as everyone else. And if you're 12th in home runs, guess what? You're probably middle of the pack when it comes to wins and losses. If that is your plan, if that's your offensive strategy, stand around and hope Carpenter, Ozuna, DeYoung, and Goldschmidt hit a homer. That's the offensive strategy. I mean, to me, A, boring baseball. B, you're not reaching your full potential. You got to be more athletic. I'm sorry. I don't want to rip on anybody. Harold Reynolds did a great demo last night regarding the walk-off for the Dodgers. Paul DeYoung has to knock that ball down. I mean, you're a shortstop in the big leagues. You have to dive, and that ball cannot go into center field. Athleticism is at its lowest point for this franchise that I've seen in forever. And, Randy, you've been covering this team for decades. I would love to hear your thoughts. Is this the most unathletic version of the Cardinals that you've seen in forever, or what?
It is, yes. And obviously they were more athletic during the Whitey Ball era. But even when I was watching the team in the 70s, they had guys like Gary Templeton and Tony Scott and Bake McBride. They were athletic. Yeah, I am completely on board with that statement, that this is, in terms of the number of athletic players the Cardinals have, the least athletic Cardinal team I've ever seen.
And it leads to losing one-run games. And that is the it factor that teams have. Why are the San Francisco Giants the surprise story before the deadline? Because they were winning these nail-biters. Then you trade away three pieces of your bullpen that was a strength of the team. Makes no sense to me. Are you in? Are you out? And all of a sudden, you're going to lose these type of games. The Cardinals were winning back in Whitey Ball era the one-run game because they could manufacture the run they needed to tie the game. They had the athleticism needed to knock the ball down and keep it in the infield, a play that will not show in any highlight. You will not see that play in a highlight. Paul DeJong diving to knock the ball down, not give anyone out. Tying run scores, game goes to the 12th, Cardinals win. No one shows that play from Paul DeJong. Instead, it goes into the outfield, and the Dodgers win the game. These are the little things that decide who's going to actually go to the playoffs, who's going to win the Central, and who's going to be in the outside wondering, why is it that we're not hitting enough home runs? And that's, to me, that's the crying shame. That's what we base teams on. Do we have a staff that can strike people out? And do we have a lineup that can hit home runs? It's bigger than that. The game is much more complicated than that.
Well, speaking of that ninth inning, you've got a pitcher in Andrew Miller, hits a guy, puts him on base. Carlos Martinez struggles, and he eventually gives up that game-winning hit. With the way things are lining up for the Cardinals in the ninth inning, and we all here on this show would much prefer Martinez to be a starter because we think he's better there, but for whatever reason, they don't think he can start right now, and he doesn't seem to think he can start. Is this a good situation for them with him as closer?
You know, I'm okay with it. I really am. What a starting pitcher is used to is walking in between innings, picking up the ball on the mound, and starting a fresh inning. So I get it. It's jarring to be a reliever, especially a closer when you've been a starter for years. I hated the idea that Andrew Miller started the inning. I don't care what the splits are for any batter that's facing a lefty coming to start the inning for the Dodgers. Let a guy that's used to starting a clean inning start a clean inning. Ask Lee Smith about this. Lee Smith wanted to come into he wanted a fresh inning. That's what every reliever wants. Now, they're going to be a good soldier and tell you after a game, you know, whatever the manager wants me, I'm fine. But the last thing they want, it's like walking to the first tee box, right? And you're like, okay, breakfast ball, right, guys? Yeah, absolutely. Boy, does that give you some confidence. Well, starting a fresh inning feels like a breakfast ball to relievers, okay? When you come in and there's second and third, or first and second, there's no one in, and now you're on the mound and this is your first time, you're going to warm up. This is your first pitch in the ninth inning. You lost your breakfast ball, and now the next swing is worth $150 on the golf course. You're like, whoa, right? So let's make life simpler on the human. I get it. The data says, no, don't let Carlos Martinez start this inning. But let's remind ourselves he's been a starter for years. Let's not bring him into the middle of the inning. Let's give him a fresh inning. And if you go back in time, and watch when the Cardinals' bullpens were really, really good. Remember when we had Todd Worrell and Lee Smith? It was a lockdown guarantee that Todd Worrell was going to start the eighth inning. The Cardinals had to leave. He would do the eighth, and Lee Smith started a fresh ninth.
Mm-hmm.
There was no mix and match. Oh, a lefty that is great against right is coming. No. These are our guys. Good luck hitting Carlos Martinez. And I wish that was the way we approached it, especially for a guy that's used to being a starter. So I'm okay. Honestly, I'm okay with Carlos Martinez closing games. Just give him fresh innings. It makes no sense to me to put him in the middle of a fire.
Greg, going on with the theme of frustration in the Dodgers series, one that seems to pop up, and I feel like we've been having this conversation for years with the Cardinals, and I want to know for you, since you watch a little bit of absolutely everybody, if this is a baseball problem, more so than just a Cardinal problem. But game one of the series, Tony Gonsolin, that nobody knew who Gonsolin was, he shoves. He's a rookie. It's six innings, scoreless. Then Dustin May, Ginger Guard, who I know you talked about last time we had you on, he shoves against the Cardinals as well. It seems like every time they face a starter they've never seen before, he has success against the Cardinals. Is this a Cardinal thing or a Major League Baseball thing?
Oh, that's a very good point. Usually, first impressions advantage pitcher. First time you see a guy, and you know this, but there is a way to make sure your guys are more prepared. At the end of the day, when you face a rookie and he's on the mound, when there is no offensive creativity, when there is zero, when everyone has the same game plan, and what I mean by that is it's not, hey, this kid usually throws a first pitch slider in the second go around to the lineup. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, hey, who's leading off tonight? Hey, Matt Carpenter, we're going to be in a shift. We got a rookie going tonight. Drop a bunt down. Just drop a bunt. Get the rookie all, you know, let's freak him out a little bit. Now, Jeff McNeil of the New York Mets, who I think is the best hitter in the National League. Chris Yelich, I love you to death. You're the best offensive player. You got more slug. Jeff McNeil is the modern Wade Boggs in my eyes. There was a kid that debuted, first big league start for the Miami Marlins. It was at Citi Field a couple days ago. That was his first pitch of the game, first pitch of his career. Jeff McNeil ambushes him and hits it over the wall. Okay? The etiquette of that is brilliant. Obviously, the kid's nervous, and he wants to throw a first pitch strike. So the moment's different, and Jeff McNeil knew it. This kid wants to throw it over the plate. I'm swinging because I know I'm going to get a fastball. When it comes to a Dustin May, who's much more talented than the kid that the Mets face, you know he's going to be amped up. Let's get someone on base immediately. Let's make this kid throw from the stretch in the first inning. Let's get in his head. Let's try to steal a base. Let's make him throw first. These are the things the Cardinals did in the 80s, and it's what throw pitchers out of whack. Ask any pitcher, the last thing they want is a guy on first base in the first inning trying to steal second and third. Secondly, the last thing they want when there's a guy, say the bases are loaded, the last kind of player they want to face is an Ozzie Smith, a guy that doesn't strike out. They'd rather face Jack Clark. So now every team is constructed with a Jack Clark leading off, a Jack Clark batting second, and a Jack Clark batting all the way through the lineup. So it's just it's slug away. It's a simple approach. There's no creativity. Let's not take advantage of the youth and inexperience and exploit a really talented kid. Kudos to you for being talented, Dustin May. But we're trying to win the game today. And I wish that is what the game plan was. Instead of, all right, Matt Carpenter, let's see what this kid's got. Swing for the fences, buddy. Oh, he struck out. That's okay. Hey, Goldie, man, you got good stuff tonight. Swing for the fences. Let's go. But I wish that wasn't the approach. But it's what we're dealing with.
Hey, Greg, one last quick thing before we let you go. And Yankees and Blue Jays tonight at 7. And then Greg is on MLB tonight after the game. And I'm sure you guys will be talking about the Yankees and White Sox playing next season at the Field of Dreams.
Yeah, it's so cool. I've been there before. I actually got a chance to fly on the commissioner's private jet when it kind of started this whole process of putting a big league diamond there in the Field of Dreams. They kind of like manufactured it. It's an amazing sight. I would recommend anyone in the Midwest to go and watch this in person. If you've seen the movie like I have, it's a must. I mean, Kevin Costner was there, got a chance to meet him, talk to him. It's cool. It's baseball being, like I said, outside the box. Do something different. Get people interested. It's a legendary movie, and it could be an unforgettable experience for anybody. So, look, you get the Yankees involved now, and the ratings are going to go even higher. I know people don't want to hear that outside of New York, but it's just the way the TV business works. The Yankees and the Red Sox draw big numbers. So Field of Dreams with the Yankees, it's going to be a moneymaker, no doubt.
We'll be watching tonight. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time as always.
All right. We'll talk next week, guys.
All right. See you later. That is the great Greg Amzinger, MLB Network, and, of course, a native St. Louisan. Joining us here on 101 ESPN. The Cardinals are currently 3.5 games back in the division and a half game out of the second wild card spot, and some people are talking about a rebuild. That's next on 101 ESPN. And I want you to know about Lindenwood University. Lindenwood means real experience, real success. Degrees that really prepare you for a career. Graduate job ready. They have a large, beautiful campus that blends nearly 192 years of tradition with modern university amenities. Lindenwood is high high-quality private university academics and is affordable. 98% of students receive financial assistance. Vibrant campus life with more than 125 student organizations and athletic programs and over 2,000 activities on campus each year. Located just a mile off of 70 in St. Charles, Lindenwood students experience the best of college town living and big city fun. A diverse student body with students from a variety of socioeconomic, religious, and ethnic backgrounds, including nearly every state and more than 70 countries. Top-notch academics, hands-on learning, and internships in every area of study. Online at lindenwood.edu. That's lindenwood.edu. Or call 636-949-4949. 636-949-4949. Lindenwood University. Real experience, real success. We'd like to hear from you about this segment, and we'll hear from you later in the show. You can use the 101 ESPN app and the mic drop feature. At STLtoday.com, Jeff Gordon writes about the Cardinals' failure to make any moves at the deadline and how things could start to crumble for the Cardinals. And if their cornerstone players don't start to improve. And he wrote about the Cubs and their additions at the deadline as well as guys getting hot, and mentions veteran players for the Cardinals not living up to expectations and their contracts. This is what he wrote about them and how the veterans need to step up like they have for the Cubs. Goldschmidt delivered a nice power surge after struggling for 3 months, but through Monday, his on-base plus slugging of .808 was still more than 100 points off his career norm. He also writes about the deficiencies of Matt Carpenter, Miles Michaelis, Paul DeJong, Dexter Fowler, Colton Wong. And to end the article, Gordon writes, going forward, the Cardinals will render the deadline inactivity complaint moot if their key players keep failing. Another pitcher or two wouldn't have saved a team suffering wholesale regression. Such regression would worsen the outlook for the next several seasons. If the cornerstone players keep crumbling, that proves Mozeliak and company constructed this roster poorly. That is Jeff Gordon at STLtoday.com. So, what he's thinking is this team will need a new blueprint and a total rebuild for the long term rather than patchwork repair for 2020. And that's a much bigger concern than what did or didn't happen at the trade deadline.
Well, and that goes back to if, in fact, your guys don't end up being the guys. And I will say this about most organizations. If your key players aren't playing like key players, if all of a sudden, and I guess Mike Trout's a bad example because the Angels aren't that great anyhow overall. But if that type of player isn't playing for you, isn't doing what he's supposed to do, you're not going to have much success. So if Paul Goldschmidt, who's supposed to be the linchpin, a better example it was Albert here. Like, even when Albert was kind of like the guy and the only one, even after MV3, you still knew that you had a chance because of Albert. Well, Goldie has been that guy throughout his entire career. And when he's not doing that, whether it's fair or unfair to put a lot on that one player, you're not going to win a lot of ball games that way. And when you have a guy like Matt Carpenter, who's not doing what even resembling the player that he was the last couple of years, going to be hard to win. To me, that doesn't signal wholesale rebuild. Now, you can question the roster construction, and I understand it. The Matt Carpenter extension is one that we've hit on quite a bit, and if you're scratching your head about that, I get it. But I don't think I'd be talking rebuild currently. Well, and by the way, how do you rebuild?
Yeah.
Well, I think
they've got $146 million payroll already for next year under contract. 11 guys under contract for $146 million.
That's probably what BT said, I think, is the biggest issue, is that even if they did want to rebuild, you don't have pieces to rebuild. I mean, you've got who's tradable. Usually a rebuilding team has a player who's in his prime still, or maybe ending his prime, coming toward the end of it, but is still productive and has a couple of years.
Like Paul Goldschmidt was to the Cardinals.
Like Paul Goldschmidt was to the Cardinals. Exactly. And somebody who's going to net you some really good prospects in return. Guys who might end up contributing for you at the major league level. Who do you have that can do something like that? That's in their 30s or early 30s. I mean, you don't have anybody like that. Most of the guys you have on your team, Paul DeJong, younger player. Colton Wong, he's still fairly young at the moment, but what would his worth be to another team if you're trying to rebuild? I mean, if you trade away guys like that, you're really just trying to shed some salary, but that doesn't make sense because they don't make that much money in the first place.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And maybe this goes, the points that we're making here go on to why many believe that the Cardinals are way overvaluing their prospects. What they need is organizationally to come up with a superstar, right? Like that's, I mean, every organization wants that,
right.
But the Cardinals need that at this point. So maybe that's why they've been even more reluctant looking at guys like Nolan Gorman, looking at Dylan Carlson. It's like, dude, we got to keep these guys around. I mean, we're looking at the players that we have here. You got some guys that are aging quickly right in front of us. We don't, to the point you just made, we don't have guys on our major league roster where we feel like we can flip them for more talent than we already have. We've got to hang on to these guys, fingers crossed, and hope for the best.
Well, your best, and a lot of teams are looking, when they're looking to trade for something to help them long term, a lot of teams are looking for starting pitching. Well, who do you have in your rotation that fits the profile of a candidate to help you rebuild? You don't have anybody like that either.
You mean like a Chris Sale a few years ago, or a Justin Verlander?
Right. I mean, Miles
Greinke.
Yeah, Miles Michaelis isn't that guy. Jack Flaherty isn't that guy, not because he's not good, but because he's just starting his career. He's young. So he's the kind of guy that you rebuild with on your team. So I don't really think they're a good candidate for rebuilding, but you can absolutely make the argument that they haven't been really good in their evaluation process. Paul Goldschmidt is Paul Goldschmidt. You know what he's going to do for you. I think he took a little bit longer to warm up this year than we're used to. He struggled early last year, and he struggled early this year. Just that struggle lasted a little bit longer than you would think he would. But everybody else, Matt Carpenter, I think they could have maybe seen this coming. He had a bad September last year. He was not really good. He was really good in August and right before that, but September was not good for him. So maybe you see that coming. Maybe you don't do an extension with him. I just think there are a lot of things that maybe they misevaluated.
And that's the main, most operative word there, misevaluated, because I think we can all agree that if Tommy Pham and Oscar Mercado were on this team right now, they'd be starting in the outfield, right?
Yeah.
And that's misevaluation. That's not valuing your players properly, because personality has to be left out of it if a guy is productive, Tommy Pham. And obviously, Oscar Mercado was a pretty good player.
The wrong outfielder.
Yeah. So that's misevaluation, and that is an issue. There's clearly a problem there.
Which, and we had this one to lean on for a long time when it came to the Cardinals, is look at all the trades that they've made. What has come back to bite you? And
up until a couple years ago,
it was like you looked at Luke Gregerson as being the player to be named later in the Khalil Greene trade. Like, oh man, that guy got away from us. He had like 8-9 great years in the big leagues before the Cardinals got him again, and it didn't go so well. Like, that was the guy that you were looking at.
Kyle Bearclaw.
Yeah, and
but that's a reliever.
Exactly.
You can't.
But yeah. Now it's different when you have these guys stepping up. So that certainly is one that ends up biting you. But still, looking at those two players, in Pham, who's a really, really good player. He is. And Mercado looks like he's got a very nice ceiling as well. That still organizationally shouldn't kill you. That shouldn't hurt your future so bad where you look at him like, oh, we're screwed. But you can't continue to make errors like that.
If you're,
and maybe that's why you're less apt to make moves.
Right.
Sometimes.
And that's the bothersome thing now, I think, is because they've missed so much in the last couple of seasons, now they're going to be afraid to do anything that might be a bit of a risk. And that would include giving a lot of money to a potential free agent, because they're afraid of missing on that too. So now I think they're just in a really bad spot at the moment. And obviously, this team could still go to the playoffs this year. They might be a wild card team. And a lot of that has to do with the fact the National League is not very good, with the exception of a couple of teams. So the door is open for them to do it. But it doesn't mean their evaluation process has been good the last 2 years. It hasn't. And I made this point the other day when Randy, you and I were doing the show, BT was out. A lot of times you'll hear from teams and they will either say directly, explicitly, or they will allude to the fact they have more information than we do. So kind of trust them in what they do. And when we criticize deals that were made, moves that were made or not made, usually it's a, look, we have a better idea of what's going on around here than the average person does. So if that's the case, then you have to make better decisions because you have more better information than we have. And they just haven't done it in the last couple of years.
We want to hear what you think the issues that plague the Cardinals are. And do you think, like Jeff Gordon said, that if they don't make the playoffs this year, that they should tear it all down and try to rebuild like the Cubs and Astros did, or like, frankly, the Rangers did for 20 years, or the Royals did for 30. Is that what you want to see from the Cardinals? That's coming up later in the show. Use the mic drop feature with the 101 ESPN app. But next, most football players are doing anything they can to gain weight. One LSU player has the perfect plan for that. That's next, before, with all due respect, on 101 ESPN.